Hi, today's November 28th, 2011. This is Taru Gasaora, Mobile Views podcast number 53. For those of you listening, a text version of this discussion with developers from PBS Kids will be available on insidemobileapps.com at a later time. Probably this week, the week of November 28th, I'm sorry. And with me, I'll let the folks at the other side introduce themselves. Could you introduce give your names and where you work, who you work for, and your job title, please?
So I can actually take that as for introductions.
Great.
We have Jeremy Roberts, the Director of Technology for PBS Kids Interactive. Laura Nooney, Senior Interactive Producer for WGBH Interactive. Kit Buckley, Senior Developer for WGBH Interactive. And Dave Pett, Senior Producer for WGBH Interactive.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So today what I wanted to talk to the team about is a new app that was launched just a few weeks ago called Fetch Lunch Rush, which is a really clever app from my point of view, and I'm not the target audience, I should say, but it's a really clever app based on the PBS Kids show Fetch, which is a science and math learning show for early elementary school kids. And you can correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, by the way. And the really cool thing about it is this app for the iPhone is an augmented reality app. The free app has you print out some pieces of paper with AR markers on them, and then there's some simple math questions for kids to use. And the idea is once they have the answer to the question, they point the iPhone's camera at the piece of paper with the answer on it, and they get a little reward for it, a visual reward. Basically, they get it right. And so I wanted to ask you all about the app, about PBS Kids, and you know what this is all about. So U.S. people are probably familiar with PBS in general and the PBS Kids programming, but can you give us a brief overview of what you all do?
Sure, Todd. PBS Kids is a trusted source of children's media, providing informal learning experiences across a multitude of platforms, including television, online, mobile, and also classroom technologies like interactive whiteboard and table. And this app is a great example of one of the ways that we're exploring the mobile space and exploring new technologies to find the possibility of learning for children.
Okay. I noticed that when I was looking at the pbskids.org site, there are a number of iOS apps for the iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch. And there is one PBS Kids app for Android. Are more planned for the Android platform?
Absolutely. You bet. We decided that we were going to make our initial foray into mobile in the space where the people that would be working on the development and the production of the games had the most experience, and where we thought we would have where we would meet with the most success. But we recognize that Android is a very important platform, and while we have one now, we have many more planned, and you should be able to see more PBS Kids Android apps coming over the next year or so.
Nice. And about the pricing, so one of the things I noticed looking at the other PBS Kids iOS apps is all the other apps are priced at $1.99 or $2.99, and the Fetch app is free. Was there a particular reason why this particular app is free?
This particular app, I'm not sure if I could go so far as to say that. We have a lot of apps that are funded in a lot of different ways. The Fetch app itself is part of the Ready to Learn cooperative agreement, which in which the Department of Education has really empowered us to try and teach kids 2 to 8 math with interactive experiences and other learning experiences. So in this case, the Fetch app we were able to put out for free. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of the apps that we're going to be producing under the Ready to Learn grant will be free, but in this case, we were able to do so, and we're happy to do so.
Great. who does the development for that? Is it all in-house, or do you also use third-party developers?
Well, I'll ask GBH to weigh in on that in 1 second, but I can sort of set the context for you. PBS is a very large and distributed network of collaborators, literally a cast of thousands. The people that are in charge of the television programming and the characters and the content and the curriculum goals for our programming on broadcast are also in charge and involved in efforts on the interactive side and mobile side. And, so there's a lot of producers involved and also relationships with external developers. So GBH, if you want to give them a sense for your particular situation, I think that would be useful.
Sure. Laura, did you want to go, or should I go ahead?
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I mean, so WGBH is the PBS public broadcasting station that produces Fetch with Ruff Ruffin TV show and the web materials along with that. And so we were also the ones to produce this app, among other things, for the Ready to Learn grant. And we have a team of staff here on site who do the design and development, including myself and Laura and Kit Buckley, who will join us on the call in a few minutes. And so from the first stage of the brainstorming all the way through to completion is something that we do as a small team in-house here.
Oh, wow. And so
that's a really interesting scenario. I'll just point at a few features of that particular configuration. We have this PBS station, WGBH, which is the producer of the television program and is also the developer.
That's right. We often produce companion interactive experiences for kids to go along with the programming that's broadcast. So we are also the producer of the Fetch with Ruff Ruffin website.
Oh, okay. And I guess that's something that, is probably some of us know about in the back of our heads but really don't think about. I know our local PBS station here in Honolulu produces its own programming, and I know, well, in particular, WGBH is well known for its, its large number of programs. So the relationship between PBS Kids and its stations is the key here. And it comes under the PBS Kids umbrella, but really it's a WGBH production. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a good summary.
Okay. So how did the idea for the app come about? I mean, obviously the show was already there, and I guess you wanted to do something with the show for the show in the terms of a mobile app. But what was the design scenario? How did the idea emerge? Did the funding come first? Did the idea come first and it went after the funding? How did that work out?
Well, I don't know how much we want to get into the whole proposal process around the Ready to Learn grant, but this game was developed as a part of a suite of products that we created under this Ready to Learn grant that we were awarded through PBS and CBV.
Okay.
And did I go too fast?
No, go ahead.
Okay. And so we proposed doing this along with a couple of other interactive experiences.
Oh, nice.
And we were looking at the augmented reality technology because PBS in particular requested that we do so. And so we thought, okay, how can we make this work with the curriculum that we're trying to develop for? Because under this Ready to Learn grant, we were looking specifically at supporting math curriculum for first and second graders. So we were trying to see, okay, how can we enhance that or create a more engaging learning experience within that curriculum, and trying to forge sort of new pathways with this new technology. So that's kind of how we started. And then we sort of looked at different, we had lots of different ideas that we sort of bubbled up, and we talked with a technical advisor who had a lot of experience working with augmented reality, and we thought about a couple of different types of augmented realities, whether we wanted to use markers or not. We, as you saw, we ended up going with the marker. And that was in part decided because of our audience and the ease with which they could manipulate the device and focus on what they needed to have within the camera screen. And we felt that this was the best for, I mean, we were targeting, you know, our ideal user is a 6 to 8 year old, and their hands are kind of smaller than ours, and their dexterity is somewhat different from ours. So we were looking at how can we take advantage of this technology in the best way possible for the curriculum and for our end user, which is what everyone does, but that's specifically what we were doing there. And again, like I said, we looked at a bunch of different ideas, and this one sort of through conversations with advisors and such is what came out. I don't know if you want to go on any more about that or not, but...
Sure, I can add a little. Todd, we were really excited to see the ideas that GBH put forth because, you know, during a part of our request and proposal process, we had asked people to noodle around in the thought space with respect to augmented reality and teaching math to this age group. And we thought that the ideas that GBH put forth were really interesting. You know, they're targeting addition and subtraction within 10 for first graders and then I think
20, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just really great to see. I mean, at this stage, we were just reading ideas on paper, but to imagine pointing your camera and device at a marker and having something that might be easy to count for the kid there. And if you play the game, you'll see that there's a help system and a scaffolding system that really gives the kids context for how to perform these operations when they're going through the act of addition and subtraction. And we thought that, you know, drawing these pieces of sushi into their space, onto their table, really just made sense. And so here we are.
And also one of the things that really appealed to me about the idea, which I think actually worked for kids, was to get them physically involved. So it wasn't just a practice of rote memorization, or because this is an operations program or it's an operations game. It's about addition and subtraction. And to get them physically moving through space, we felt like would enhance their experience so that it would be something maybe a little... it would be unfamiliar to them in terms of how they practice these kinds of skills in the past. So that was another appeal of like getting, basically merging the virtual world with their real life world by the use of these markers.
And to clarify,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, and to clarify for listeners who and for our readers who may not have tried the app themselves yet, and I do encourage you to do so regardless of your age. Is the way it works is you download a PDF that has these AR, well, it has the answers on it. I think there's like 1 through 10, and with the AR markings on it. And the idea is to cut out these pieces of paper. I think there are about 4 to 6 per page. And you scatter the answers physically around wherever you are, on a desk or on a couch or floor or whatever it is. And when the child gets the problem and reaches a conclusion to what the answer should be, points the camera at it, and you literally have to move around. But even if you have a child who has more limited mobility, you could put the papers closer together so you don't have to spin around or walk around or anything like that. But if the child is mobile, then it really does literally get the kid moving around.
I've seen examples where parents have hidden the markers in different places and sort of added that extra element of, not necessarily hide and seek so much as treasure hunt or scavenger hunt.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, the AR piece of it, the augmented reality of it, is really, really clever. And I really like the way you tried it. And I should note that people who just want to try it out and you don't feel like downloading or you don't feel like printing out the PDF and scattering it around. When I tested it, I downloaded a PDF and just displayed it on my screen, and the app was able to recognize the AR registration marks right on my my notebook display. So you don't even have to print it out if you just want to test it real quick.
That's really interesting. And it's funny you mentioned that because we're looking into additional and, you know, further augmented reality technologies that watermark images that can be displayed either on a computer screen or also on a television screen.
Oh, neat.
that we're kicking around. Yeah,
you know, it's funny. I think interacting with the TV, literally interacting with the television show, is something that would appeal to a lot of kids and adults. Years ago, kind of as a side note, it didn't work super well, but I think Barney, which at least here is on PBS. I don't know if it's on PBS everywhere. But Barney had a Microsoft doll, that interactive doll, you know, like a stuffed animal kind of thing, that interacted with the sounds coming out of the TV, or was it a visual registration? I can't remember. But anyway, it would interact with certain Barney episodes. I bought one for my daughter, as a matter of fact, years ago. And it was kind of amusing, and, you know, although it spooked her at first, to be honest. So when you went to this, when you decided to take a look at the augmented reality portion, you said you brought in a consultant to help you with that. Was the consultant used throughout the development process, or was it just for the initial design and sort of to get familiarized with the available processes involved with augmented reality apps?
Well, advisors were available to us throughout the development process, but I think we relied on him most heavily in the pre-production of it, trying to determine what would really be the best way to use this technology. We also used advisors, you know, for the curriculum as well, so we were relying on experts to help us in those ways.
As a part of the overarching Ready to Learn initiative, we pulled together several teams of people that we really believe represent some of the best knowledge in their individual fields. And we take these thought or expertise leaders, and we try to make them as available as possible to the production teams and development teams that are working on the content itself. So this would apply to not only technology experts and advisors like Blair McIntyre, who helped with this game, but also people that are experts in the curriculum space, both for literacy and mathematical curriculum.
Okay. I'm going to guess that it's, I was told that you don't really have download numbers quite from that, because it was just released recently. But have you gotten feedback in addition to what's available from customers on the iTunes App Store yet?
Yeah, overarchingly, it's very good feedback. I think there's a little hiccup on the 4S, but that's an issue we were able to isolate and correct relatively quickly. So that has been the only bit of non-ecstatic feedback I've seen. So overall, I think it's going very well.
Great.
I'm very pleased.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just echoing that I'm very pleased.
Ah, okay. All right. And you mentioned that you at least one parent gave you feedback that they were using kind of a treasure hunt kind of technique. Have you gotten other kinds of feedback like that that might feed into the next version of the app or a completely new app?
Well, I've gotten lots of feedback from children that have used the app, but not so much from parents, at least not through the App Store. I have, however, gotten some very interesting feedback from people I'm excluding from the parents category, even though they are parents and even though they do have kids of this age. And I'm doing that because they have a knowledge of sort of the state of the art of augmented reality, and so I'm not really lumping them in with the normal public with respect to this app. But I've gotten some really interesting thoughts along the lines of exploring not using printed markers and using objects in the world and trying to recognize those, perhaps recognizing circles in the world or triangles in the world and possibly using those kinds of ideas. I don't know, Dave or Laura, have you guys gotten any anecdotal feedback?
When we were doing testing, the kids were very engaged, which was so nice when you test something and they like it. You know, you've done it right. And one of the things that they were asking for is to make it harder, to instead of have two sets of operatives, to have maybe a third, you know. So That's an interesting idea. I love the idea of not having the intermediary marker, but really having the program or the game be able to respond to what's actually in the real world, so that there you wouldn't have to print anything, that you could just take the game into your world and do something with it. So technology wasn't really there yet when we were producing this, but I presume that if this soon, not very far from now, it will be, and I think that will be really exciting.
What was the timeline for the development of this? So when did it start, and how long did it take until you were able to release it to the App Store?
We started development, I think, in February, and we were working on this concurrently with a couple of other interactive pieces, and we finished our work for the most part on those at the end of August.
Wow.
So it was a very fast production period, considering what we were the learning curve.
Development from start to finish was about 7 months, roughly. That's really fast. So I assume that you have an experienced design and documentation and development person or persons there at WGBH.
Oh yeah, my experience with WGBH has just been stellar. They really know kids. They have lots and lots of experience creating interactive experiences for children in this age group. And, my experience with their ability to do child-centric information architecture and visual design and then follow through to fulfillment with programming and development all on a timeline and a really great managed project. Start to finish.
Sure sounds like.
Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome.
This is Lauren. Kit's back now.
Hi. Hi, this is Todd. Could you introduce yourself to the people listening, as well as me?
Oh, yeah. This is Kit Buckley. I'm a developer at WGBH.
Okay. Well, it's great to meet you, Kit. So we spent the last few minutes talking about the Fetch Lunch Rush app that features an augmented reality component for people using an iPhone and actually an iPad 2 also. And I wanted to ask you about the development of the app itself. So what did you use to develop the app? Was it just straight Objective-C with Xcode, or did you use some tools, AR, SDK, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was primarily just Xcode and Objective-C, except for the AR SDK, which we did. We licensed AR Toolkit.
Okay.
We looked at a couple of different ones, but that was the one we settled on. And that SDK does basically all the magic. It does all the it does marker recognition. And sort of builds the 3D scene based on the markers that it sees. So, and then I just tied in OpenGL into that to put the 3D things into place.
Now, had you used, had you developed any sort of like little toy projects using augmented reality prior to this app? Was this your first AR development effort?
No, this was the first foray into any AR stuff that I had done.
And how did you find using AR Toolkit in particular? Was it pretty easy to pick up? I mean, the earlier when we discussed the timeline, this whole thing was finished in 7 months, start to finish. So you really had to come up to speed really fast on this Toolkit in particular.
Yeah, there were some pretty good examples that came with the Toolkit that I basically just sort of repurposed. They had a basic marker with a 3D cube on it, which was my starting point. And so I could kind of see what was happening in the background and just add my own code to change the squares into delicious bite-sized raw fish.
Right. And again, for people who haven't tried the app, Fetch Lunch Rush, so the idea is you point the camera, well, you get some math questions, and you point the camera at the AR registration markers printed on pieces of paper, or in my case, I just pointed at my screen, and for testing. And the person sees, usually a child, but in my case not, is some sushi, the correct number of sushi, like 5 or 6 or 7, whatever the answer is supposed to be, on the screen, overlaid, these drawings are overlaid on the real world, which is the AR part of the app. Does that pretty much sum it up okay?
Yeah, absolutely. You're basically, I mean, the conceit is that you are placing orders. Ruff is Ruff, the character from the show Fetch with Ruff Ruffman, is producing a movie, and you're helping him out by making sure that his cast and crew all are fed. And because it's Hollywood, everyone's eating sushi. So you're making sure that you've got the right number of sushi pieces for every order. So that's the connection there.
Okay, right. The storyline behind the app itself. Now, so you basically, if it was basically Xcode, AR Toolkit, or some of the OpenGL, anything else that you want, any other tools that you found particularly useful in the development process, Kit?
Let's see. There wasn't really much else. I developed an iPhone app earlier for another project we had, and some of the lessons learned and bits of code that I used there I came in handy for this one. It's a swiftly moving target, the iOS.
That's right. Yeah, and in fact, earlier I guess someone mentioned that there was a little glitch specifically in the 4S. So was it specifically a hardware issue or was it an iOS 5 issue?
We came upon first a hardware issue with the Verizon iPhone 4 in the late spring, and the AR Toolkit had not been coded to take into account its camera. There are some specific camera parameters, you know, depth of field and focal length and things like that, that aid in the ability of the augmented reality SDK to get a good read on what the marker you're looking at is and where it is and where all the corners are. And they hadn't, because it didn't exist, didn't have one for the Verizon phone. So, and in fact, I think even the iPad 2 caught them by surprise, but that was just as we were starting. So I think they had taken that one into consideration. There is now a generic camera, so that hopefully as new iDevices come out with cameras, it'll give it a best guess as opposed to just crying to itself and quitting.
Right.
The iOS itself is moving, and the third-party library that we're using is moving and needs to track the iOS development, and our game code is moving and needs to track the third-party library and the iOS development. It's a fun space.
Are you the sole developer for this app? I know there are other people involved in other aspects of it, and the curriculum side, and I assume the artwork and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for this one, I was the only developer.
Wow.
We've done another one before where there were a couple of us working in parallel. It was a suite of mini games, the one we've done before for Martha Speaks. And that worked out fine. It just seemed like this one was a smaller deal, so one person could do it. Little did we know.
Could you talk about how the sushi models were made? What software was used to actually do the 3D modeling? And what does our toolkit support in terms of import?
We actually had a designer put those together. Chian Lau was our designer, and he built the sushi models and textured them using Blender, which is an open source 3D software. And then he exported them as wavefront.obj files. And in the AR SDK, there are some libraries to import .obj files and turn them into OpenGL code. And I sort of tweaked those libraries to do what we needed to do with them. But that was mostly done within the SDK. That conversion. There were just a couple of little things that I had to do.
So, based on the assumption that WGBH is going to do at least another one or two AR type apps, was this a good learning experience for you, in your opinion?
It definitely was for me.
I think we all learned a lot. We learned a lot about user experience and user interface, and clearly about technology. It was a great learning experience for all of us.
I learned a lot about life, love, freedom,
and sushi. We learned a lot.
And sushi.
Just as the iOS landscape and the smartphone landscape generally is moving pretty quickly, the AR SDK landscape is also moving pretty quickly. There were packages that weren't quite ready when we were ready to start, and there are others that were expensive that are now getting cheaper. There were some that were for Android only, they're now iOS, some that were iOS that are now for Android, all of which in the last 5 months,
mm-hmm.
8 months since we started this. And so there's a lot of sort of interest in it, and several different companies working on it. And they each have their own sort of things that they do well, things that they do less well, things that they focus on in the AR, under the larger AR umbrella.
Is AR Toolkit specifically for iOS, or does it also handle other mobile platforms?
AR Toolkit is there's a specific iOS version of it, but there's versions for just about any platform. It started out as an open source AR library, and it's been forked and stuff like that. But you can still kind of get back to the original source on some platforms, not for iOS.
And based on this changing AR toolkit landscape, have you decided what to use for your next AR project?
I would imagine it would be dependent on what that AR project was, because again, as Kit had just said, each of these different toolkits has a different focus.
Ah, good point.
And a different what it's best at doing. So depending on what we wanted to be trying to do, we would make a selection, I think, based on that.
Okay.
And yeah, the AR toolkit, specifically for a marker-based AR thing, which is what we used it for. In other words, you have to look at big squares that have a pattern on them, and then that will get recognized. There are others that try to do something a little more naturalistic, where you might have a big border around the thing, that you're looking at, but it's not just a blocky pattern. It can be any kind of image. And then there are others that also involve the compass and the GPS and things like that, and do kind of this real world, and the accelerometer, so that you hold, as you hold it around the room, it shows you different things depending on which way you're looking, things like that. So everybody's, you know, there are a variety of different things that you can be doing that would all be considered augmented reality. Again, there's just sort of a lot of different approaches. So I think it would depend on what we were going to try to do the next time. Although obviously I know the most about AR Toolkit, so if that works, all the better.
Okay. And speaking of next time, is there anything any of you can discuss about what's up next for PBS Kids or WGBH, and specifically in terms of mobile apps that we might be able to expect in the next few months?
Sure, I can start. We just finished up a year's worth of this grant, and we're moving into the next year. Just as there were 7 suites that totaled over 70 games last year, of which 3 of those, I think, or 4 of those are mobile, we'll be doing a comparative number again in this upcoming year. I can tell you for certain that there are trials planned here at the PBS Kids level to explore the teaching capabilities of augmented reality specifically, not only marker-based stuff, but also feature recognition and these location-based experiences that Kit alluded to, as well as gesture recognition and gesture control type things. As to the specific design of what games are going to be coming as a part of the Ready to Learn initiative, I can't speak to that yet. We're at the stage now where we're just settling on which properties will be involved in the next round of production. But it won't be too long until we have everything settled and we're moving forward, and people will be submitting content plans in a very similar fashion to last year's development effort.
Great. And if I could make one suggestion, although my daughter is probably a little too old for, she's a teenager, so she's probably a little too old for your target market, but I think one thing people might find really interesting is, you know, the Kinect PC hardware is supposed to be coming out in 2012. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to be able to, as you're talking about gesturing, it'd be a lot of fun to literally gesture at your computer and to interact with some kind of learning program.
Yeah, actually,
absolutely.
I think that's really exciting, and actually it's really exciting for younger kids too. And we did a little bit of that for the work we did on Curious George. It wasn't a mobile experience, but we were experimenting with the gesture-based interactions there. So, yeah, that's a really exciting possibility to look into.
Yeah, just to give you some background, Todd, that there are a couple experiences that GBH produces as part of last year's initiative where via your webcam and or your microphone, the child can control the experience by either making motions that are on the camera or making noises and things of that nature, which is really, really cool stuff.
Very cool.
I really am interested in either making, you know, sort of a theremin type instrument that could be played using a webcam, or possibly even being able to conduct my own orchestra. How cool would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, there's it's a side note, but there is actually a theremin type app for the iPhone where you wave the iPhone around and it changes the pitch and that sort of thing. I downloaded it. It's kind of fun to play with.
Well, without getting into the details, I maybe we would stop short of asking the child to wave the phone around and instead place it on the table and just wave their hand around over top of it or something.
Yeah, it might be safer. Might definitely be safer. Is there anything you'd like to point out that I neglected to ask, if you think it's important, before we close out this discussion?
I'm feeling pretty good. Dave or Laura?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. I mean, just stay tuned for more innovative games and experiences for either the next round of our work.
Okay. So
absolutely. Watch for great stuff from GBH and even more through this Ready to Learn grant.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I know you are all very busy, and I appreciate you taking, as I said, taking time to speak to me. This is Tadagasaworo, MobileView's podcast, on behalf of what will be an Inside Mobile Apps article. Today is November 28th, 2011. We've been speaking with the good folks from PBS Kids and WGBH about their use of, interesting use of augmented reality in their latest free app for the iPhone called Fetch Lunch Rush. Hey, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.